Hey, everybody, this is Random Chatterings, episode 33. I am Arlo Rodriguez, and my God, my special guest today is...
Shall I say my name?
I mean, at any point, whenever you feel comfortable.
I'm Eric Helwig, also known as Hot Dad.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I'm talking with YouTuber Hot Dad. For those who don't know, unless you want to tell the audience what you do, Eric.
I mean, I make emotionally charged comedy music. That's how I'd like to describe it.
I definitely sense a lot of inspiration and a lot of energy goes into your music.
I mean, I want it to be silly, but I also want that weird emotional component. I mean, I want it to be like, wait a minute, the song's about that. I want it to be deceiving a little bit.
I got that impression from your, the Rio Olympics music video.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a new, we'll talk about. I mean, this is sort of a recent development of trying to do relevant things, mm-hmm. do songs that are about things that are actually happening and are not like, you know, a show that was on the air 20 years ago, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. We should definitely talk about your TV album, I think, which is the first time I heard about you. In fact, was the podcast Laser Time, they played your Are You Scared of the Dark? Reimagined intro theme, and I actually thought that was the original theme song for Are You Alone in the Dark?
I'm going to correct you. Are You Afraid?
Are you
Afraid of the Dark?
Damn it, I knew I had the name wrong, but I... Are You Afraid of the Dark?
You never know when you're supposed to cut in and correct people. You know? There's always an awkward pause where you maybe let it slip, but then you did it a second time, and I was like, well, I gotta step in here. But it's not like it's a sacred show. It's not like I'm saying this because I'm like, you can't say it wrong.
Right, but I think that's the first. I think this is the first song I heard. I heard from you.
I mean, that was also an interesting one. I think because all of the songs prior to it were like. I don't know if explicitly is the word I want to use, but they were very obviously silly. Because it was like Girls was the first one, and then Scrubs, and then like Mad About You. It was just like all these ones that are like nobody's going to, think that they're good songs in like an emotional sense. I mean, here I'm using that word again, but yeah, right, like right. I wrote that song, and then my girlfriend was like, oh, you should make that a real song for... I have my other band called Girls Who Care, and she's like, you should make that a Girls Who Care song. And I was like, well, I'd have to change the lyrics. And she's like, no, just leave them how they are. It sounds good. And I just was like sitting there and I was like, what is this song? Like I made it. I just thought about the song title and I just made this stupid song and it's like really compelling. Like it hit me and I was like, what is this? And then that was, yeah, I don't know. That was when I was like, what is this project supposed to be?
Right. Cause I don't have the album on me right now, but okay. What exactly, like what was, cause the only other song I heard, if I'll be honest, is the Seinfeld song, which is hilarious, but the music video was incredibly disturbing, but okay. Also funny in the same way. So I guess when you were thinking about what shows you were thinking about in order to reimagine their theme songs, like what was going through your mind when you were doing that?
I mean, I don't want to use this. What do I want to say here? I was taking a lot of requests from people because I didn't really early on. I didn't really care what I was doing. I mean, it was just like I would do whatever. I was just trying to test myself to see, can I write a song every day?
Wow.
And that's what they ended up being. It was like I had this, I guess at that time was like this pipe dream of being a musician. I was like, what is this supposed to be? How do you do it? How are you a professional musician? that would assume that you're making music every day. So I was like, okay, I'm going to try to do this every day. And once I had, I guess, the format, which was, you know, pick a show, do a theme song. Like, once comments started coming out on YouTube, I started putting them all into a list, and then I would, like, wake up and just stare at the list until one of them jumped out at me, and then I just, like, pace around the house until a hook came to me, and then just run back to my studio and just start recording it. And then, like, that was the process for picking them, but, like, you know, I mean, in terms of the lyrics and, like, what the songs are about, I don't know, I tend to just fixate on some detail that isn't necessarily big to the show, but that people who have watched the show know that it's not what the show is necessarily about all the time. So like the Seinfeld one, you know, is just like mentioning George selling bras. I mean, it's like that happened in one episode, you know, and to represent the full range of the character with that one trait, I think is kind of nice. Like, people who get it are like, they see that and they're like, oh, this is hilarious, this is funny. But yeah, then people who don't, I mean, there are people who are still mad that I would have even made a song about Seinfeld because there's this sacred aura around Seinfeld, I guess, that like you're not allowed to parody it. And now you've got Seinfeld 2000 and these other like joke Twitter accounts that make jokes about it. It's become more commonplace to do it, but I dare say I was making fun of Seinfeld on the internet before it was acceptable to do it. So that kind of roundabout way of answering the question, but yeah, I hope it answers it.
It does. It does. I'm very interested in what compelled you originally to, I mean, eventually you found a format to work with, but just to try to write songs every single day. That sounds like, that kind of reminds me of, like, for writers, like saying that you should write 3 pages of like words every day, and then eventually you become a better writer. I mean, is that what your approach was when you decided to do that?
Well, I mean, so when I quit my job in IT in 2012, and I wanted to do internet marketing, that I thought I'd be good at that, and I was generating Tumblr sites that, you know, I was making up articles. I'd find some news item and rewrite it and use a headset mic, this very headset mic that I'm talking on now that I had bought to use with Dragon Naturally Speaking, to just like ramble on, to come up with a summarized article. And just, I was doing a lot of writing related things and not getting anywhere with it. And then I read about people doing well self-publishing erotica. And so that's what I did from 2012 to 2014, roughly. And my goal was 2,000 words a day, 5 days a week.
Of erotica.
And it's like, that was, yeah, like that's what would work. I mean, I ended up doing like 50 or so shorts and like 5 novels, I think, is what I ended up doing.
Shit.
I mean, it's like, my estimation is probably 750,000 words or something, or what I published. But it was like, so I already had that mindset of, you know, the only way to write a novel is to every day write some words. And then all of a sudden it would be done. So yeah, it was like, that structure was already there. And I guess it's like, if you are self-employed, then you understand income streams, and it's like you're always trying to create something that will work for you when you're not working.
Right.
So it's like you write a song, you write a book, and then you, I don't know, when you're hanging out with your friends in the evening or whatever, you're selling books or you're selling songs or things are selling for you. And once that's ingrained, I don't know, it changes the way you think, and it's helped me a lot, I think, and it helped me a lot with, you know, doing the TV songs, definitely. Like, right. Actually, I did 105, and I look back at that, and I'm like, how did this happen?
Like, wow.
It's just so many songs.
I mean, that's like a level of creativity, just by the input, and just by the, like, just imagining, like, every song has to be distinct in some way, shape, or form. I mean, you definitely have a style. It's a very noticeable style. Oh, that's a perfect question. Yeah, where did you develop your style from? Or I guess, what are some musical influences that kind of led to the style that you currently have for your music?
I guess I've always been kind of pragmatic in terms of, like, I've never been a very, like, pure artist. Like, a lot of what I do is based on efficiency. And, I mean, I was just a drummer. I'm 31. I was just a drummer from, I'm going to say, age 15 to maybe 26. Like, I had no other aspirations outside of that. And I guess I always kind of had a knack for melody, but I'd never tried to do anything with it. And I guess it's like recording and audio production and everything like that. Like, I was used to working with people who seemed to be doing something that was really esoteric and complex, and like, you know, engineers, and you need to go to school to this, and you need to understand all these plugins. And it was like, I was really intimidated by it. So when I finally tried to put together a song, I was like, I don't care what this sounds like. I'm just going to try to do this. Right. And then everything builds from that. Like, it was like finally that I'd actually tried to do it. You know, I went through a really bad band situation when I was like 25-ish, and I started playing guitar basically out of necessity, because the guitarist had quit the band, and it was like, well, I was still going to play drums in the band, but I was going to try to co-write songs with the singer. So I started learning guitar, and like, after I had that component, the guitar, it's like I got into synth-based stuff because, A, I really liked it, and B, you can create recordings at home using software synthesizers that sound good. And I don't know, again, it's that pragmatic approach, because it's like all of a sudden I was not thinking about it in terms of, oh, I have to pay for studio time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need somebody else to mix and master and record me and do all this stuff. I need a collaborator. Like, I didn't need any of that anymore. All of a sudden it was like, okay, well, if I do stuff that's based around software synthesizers, I can do this at home. I can start to put it all together. So I already had a synth bias to begin with, but I guess the first music that I really remember growing up on, I mean, it's like Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever, like that album, some U2, Weezer's The Blue Album. I mean, it was like I was becoming cognizant, you know, of my tastes when it was like, you know, the early 90s. And it was just basically what my dad listened to. But my dad didn't like full albums. He liked singles.
Oh, like, interesting. Why didn't he like full albums?
Just, he was so picky. I don't know. It's just, I remember getting the Best of New Order to listen to one song, which was Regret. And that was it. And I remember we were listening to the cassette in the car, and he's just like, I hate this thing, except for that one song. And I'm sure that impacted me. I mean, like, I've found albums that I like, but inevitably I was drawn to just the singles. So I don't know. I guess that's kind of like, maybe that's something that I'm trying to do all the time. Like, I'm not trying to make, I feel like an album ends up having ebbs and flows and highs and lows and, like, you know, quote unquote filler tracks and maybe just a little acoustic thing that's a segue into something bigger. And it's like, I guess I'm kind of cutting that fat out sometimes, or like when I was doing the TV themes, I was treating it like, how would I write a single for this? Or how would I make a song that would be catchy, right, you know, about Twin Peaks or something, you know?
That's kind of interesting, because I heard some arguments. I mean, I know that one of the most highly acclaimed albums of all time is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but then there's been some people more recently arguing that it's the power of, oh my god, I haven't actually listened to this album in a while, and I completely forgot what the last song is. Crap. Shit. I used to something something down the street. No, that's not it. God damn it, I don't remember the name of the song. But I need to look it up. But you know how there's that one song from that album that's so powerful. A Day in the Life? Is that what it is? It's A Day in the Life, isn't it?
I'm not actually a Beatles guy. I have incredible respect for the Beatles. Mm-hmm. But that I think is also my dad. He was not a Beatles fan. And it's like, yeah, the power that they had as songwriters. But I think about it in terms of what they enabled and then what came after them. And it's like, as a drummer, there's no way that I could deny Ringo Starr's significance and importance. But it's like he inspired like every super incredible rock drummer. Like everybody who then followed him, you know, built on the foundation. It's the same thing with like Lars Ulrich in Metallica. Like people bash him for being not the greatest drummer anymore. But he like invented a lot of the like fundamental meat and potatoes metal beats. Like he's the guy who made them. So it's like, again, you know, like you got to give them some leeway and you got to give credit where credit's due.
Right.
But I don't know. I've just never been. I'm trying to think of like I like some Led Zeppelin, but I'm not like a. I don't listen to other than like Steely Dan. Steely Dan and I guess some Toto from the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's about when my window of listening starts, I guess would be like the late 70s in terms of engineering and how records sounded. Like that's what I like. I like from that point on.
The Toto and Steely Dan, those were those weird, bands, I should say. I mean, that's that weird time frame that I've ignored and I don't know why. I mean, of course, I'm a populist, so I
sure
listen to the Beatles, and listen to the Rolling Stones, listen to the Birds, then like the Metallica and like Michael Jackson. But yeah, Toto and like groups like that in the middle, like in the 70s. That's that weird.
The thing for me is that like you just said Michael Jackson. Well, members of Toto co-wrote multiple songs on Thriller. I mean, like. My favorite drummer of all time who played with Steely Dan is the drummer on Beat It. Like,
wow.
That's what drew me to them is that I started seeing their names everywhere. And I was like, what kind of player? Because like I'm so lazy. Like I don't like instruments. Like I need them mm-hmm. to do my job. But I never practice guitar anymore. Like I need to sit down and do these things. But it's like once I hit a limitation in the composing process, then fine, I might sit down and start practicing again. But it's like, as long as I can do what I hear in my head, then I'm happy. But like, these players would go into a studio and the full band would record the track all at once. You know, and they'd nail it. They'd nail it in two or three takes. Like, I don't understand it. And it was just a whole other level of discipline. And that, like, really spoke to me. I don't know. Like, there was something really magical about knowing that there were these rhythm sections and full bands that would just, you know, jump between singer. You know, who's going to be the next big singer? And then they'd be the backing band. And it's like...
Right. It's pretty amazing.
And then you look at Steve Lukather from Toto, he played all the guitar on Beat It, except for the solo. Like, and he's as good of a guitar player as... Eddie Van Halen, like, it's not, you know, he could have done the solo, but they obviously wanted the star power, you know, from bringing in a superstar guitarist versus yeah. the lesser known guy who's on every single record you've ever heard, you know, but you don't know his name.
There's a documentary on Netflix, I think, that Chris Antista was talking about. I don't remember. It was about like this backing group that I think they helped co-write Pet Sounds.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The documentary?
I'm usually pretty up on my rock and roll documentaries, but I don't know this one. I mean, I just recently started reading about Brian Wilson. I guess he's another one that like tons of respect for him, but I've never really even listened to any Beach Boys in a serious fashion. Mm-hmm. And then I just started reading about like his studio habits and just like him spiraling out of control and writing these insane songs and It was like he scared away like Iggy Pop and somebody else. They said like that guy's crazy. Like they were trying to hang out at his house and he invited them over and they fled like out of fear because he wouldn't stop playing this. He was obsessed with what is it? There's like this old English song, hymn thing, like folk song that he was completely obsessed with. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I don't think so.
The Beach Boys did a cover of it.
Hmm, okay.
Let me see if I can find it really quick. It's like something pound. Something pound. It's like one of the weirdest songs. But yeah, it said that he wrote it. He became obsessed with the song. And he recorded it like 10 times or something.
Oh my gosh.
Where is it? The greatest, he called it the greatest song ever written. And it's like when you hear it, let me see here. I'll see what I'll find. You can ask me another question if you want, or you can, I mean, if you have something else you want to talk about while I dig for this.
I'm trying to find who the hell were the people who wrote Pet Sounds.
Shortening Bread. That's what it is.
Shortening Bread.
Yeah, he said that was... Alice Cooper reported that Wilson once considered the traditional standard Shortening Bread to be the greatest song ever written, as he quotes Wilson for an explanation. I don't know, it's just the best song ever written.
That's...
And the Beach Boys covered it. There's a cover of it that the Beach Boys did.
Wow. Okay, so the document is called The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew, okay. Mm-hmm. Is it still on Netflix?
I'm not sure. I think that was 2005, and I think when Chris was talking about it. So I think it might still be on Netflix. But
you know what? I remember seeing that name, but I yeah, this sounds great.
I also heard about Brian Wilson. That I think the success of what song was it? No, it was the release of Star. Wow, I have not thought about this song for a long time. Starby Fuels Forever by the Beatles, that also became an obsession of his, and I think that's what inspired him to do Pet Sounds.
This sounds right. I mean, anything that he could get fixated on. I mean, it's really depressing because it was just like he went from one addiction to the next.
Right.
I mean, from like all the drugs to then food to, I mean, it was just like one, you know, to work. I mean, it was everything. Everything was an addiction. It's, I don't weird. Know. I like those kinds of stories. I mean, the quirky tales of rock and roll history, you know?
I mean, it's kind of nice when there, I mean, there's like some amount of levity to it. Most of the time, it's like when we're talking about, oh, Jesus Christ, Sid Vicious and how he allegedly murdered his girlfriend. It's like, it's not so much fun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely the darker tales, but like where you get these, like, a guy scaring away a bunch of, where is it here? It's like Mickey Dolenz wrote in his autobiography that while tripping on LSD with Wilson, John Lennon, and Harry Nilsson, he remembers Wilson playing Shortening Bread on piano over and over again. And then right here, Elton John and Iggy Pop were mutually bemused by an extended, contumacious Wilson-led sing-along of Shortening Bread, leading Pop to flee the room, proclaiming, I gotta get out of here, man. This guy is nuts.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, tripping on LSD and just repeatedly playing Shortening Bread.
I can't even imagine that. Oh, God. I've smoked marijuana before, which I've talked about on the podcast, actually. And I've thought about trying LSD, but when I hear stories like this, it's like, no, I cannot. My imagination's insane enough as it is.
He's, yeah, but I mean, there's a difference between, like, he was just like waking up every day and taking LSD and then going to the studio like nonstop. I mean, this was a guy who was like reliant on it. I mean, it's a good experience. It can be a positive experience, but it can also be, yeah, like really frightening. And I've never found it conducive to doing any kind of work. I mean, it's like, what's his name? Richard D. James from Aphex Twin, or the man Aphex Twin himself, has made comments about drug use, like, oh, I like drugs, but they have nothing to do with my work. Like, everybody being like, oh man, you must have been on so many crazy drugs. And it's like, also Tim Heidecker has made, I mean, that's another one of my comedy heroes, but like, he's had comments where people are like, oh man, where do you come up with your ideas, bro? You guys must smoke a lot of weed. And, you know, and it's always like, well, anybody who does anything creatively is going to tell you, like, ideas just come and go. It's not about, you know, them, or they're just perpetually high, man. And they have the craziest ideas. Like, that's not how you're going to get work done at all.
Right. I think we should take a break. But when we come back, more from Eric Helwig / Hot Dad.
That's me.
All right. We'll be right back, everybody. So hungry, I can feel it in my feet. I see my girl and I want to go eat. Make a reservation. I hope it's not far. We might drive in separate cars. And we're back. Taking this back in is We Shared a Meal by Hot Dad. Yes, I haven't asked you this yet. Where did your name come from?
Hot Dad. I mean, I'm not a dad, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know. I guess it just seems to represent what I want. I don't know other than that. I mean, it just... When I came up with it, I was like, okay, this is... There's something a little sleazy about it. There's something a little sexy about it. You know, there's something a little intense about it. Those are all the things I like. Sleazy, sexy, intense.
I mean, it's certainly catchy.
I mean, it wasn't... I didn't think it that far through, but then all of a sudden it's like you're... I have like a bunch of these songs that are not on Bandcamp yet that are like, one is called Son and Wife, and it's like the chorus is like, I don't want to live my life without a son and wife in my life, and it's like this really hard rockin' anthem, and it's like it also ends up being really bizarre, you know, that it's by Hot Dad, and it's this guy saying specifically that he needs a male child and a wife. I mean, the song is basically about like impregnating a woman specifically, but like in a really clinical way. Like, it's not like a romantic, it's like an egg, you know, the egg needs to meet the sperm kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Sperm meeting egg, etc.
Oh, man. Actually, yeah, also, the name of your more serious band is It's Girls Who Don't Care?
Girls Who Care.
Girls Who Care, my bad.
No problem. Close, though.
I keep fucking up all over this recording.
I mean, it's not... I still haven't even done... The sad thing about it is that I worked... I have a really great producer friend in New York City. Very talented guy. I mean, he's produced some great records, etc. And prior to me starting the TV songs, I finished writing that album and I sent it to him. And basically, Are You Afraid of the Dark was the last song I wrote before I went to New York City to do drum tracks.
Wow.
For my Sirius album. Mm-hmm. And I would say Sirius in quotation marks because I don't... It feels serious, but I don't necessarily... You know, it's not like life was hard or... I mean, I was in... I've been in the same relationship for 6 years, wow, you know, with my girlfriend. Like, it's not... Like, I don't know, life was going pretty well and I had some excess money and I was like, I'm going to make this album, you know, and have this guy produce it. And so I guess I thought that, like, him producing it... You know, he really believed in the material and he had had other acts blow up that he'd worked with. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to invest the money in this and I'm going to put it out there. And, you know, some of the two singles that I've released have quite a few plays. Like, Out Here has, like, I'm going to say probably 200,000 or more plays across all platforms at this point.
Shit.
Like, it's out there and it's done pretty well, but that's not enough to do anything like in serious music. Like, there's so many contenders, so many albums sound great, so many new bands are coming out every day that, like, when I realized that my comedy music was reaching more people, it's like, this is not as competitive. Like, people aren't doing silly songs. Like, there are a few major acts, but for the most part, people are not really pushing this that hard. Not in the same way.
It's true.
So that album is 2 years old. It's still not out. I'm hoping to release it like by the end of the summer. I don't even know if that's going to happen, but like, yeah, it's been done. I've been sitting on this professionally produced album for 2 years just because I haven't felt like it's the time to release it. Like, part of me, I guess, is just worried that like it's not going to matter, but ultimately my expectations are gone for it. Like, I think it's a pretty great album, but I've learned so much more about composing. Like, I wrote 105 TV theme songs after I finished writing the songs for it. It's like, inevitably, I'm going to become better as a composer by just doing things more often. So, I don't know. I hear my inexperience on it, and I guess it's like, it's a snapshot of who I was at the time, and that's how I have to treat it, but yeah.
That's the challenge of being...
That's my serious...
That's the challenge of being a creator, is that you always know that to some extent your work is going to become an artifact of your life. I mean, not that I should mention that I have created stuff before, but I mean, like, I was just telling my roommate yesterday, who just moved into the house that I'm living in right now, mm-hmm. I was just telling him about this this YouTube short I made a long time ago called Arkor Arlay, and... And I was telling him how our only intention in that video was just to make people laugh, but it was also incredibly crude and offensive. But, I mean, we weren't even thinking about, like, I guess we thought about structure, we thought about beginning, middle, and end, but mostly we're just thinking about, here's this crazy scenario, and here's the payoff for that scenario, and then it just concludes with this crazy thing that happened. And it's like, I didn't really know anything about writing. I didn't know anything about, like, directing anything, but it was just something I decided to do, and it's kind of catapulted my way of how I pictured the projects that I'm working on now, but working on now in quotation marks, because I'm not really working on anything right now.
I mean, again, it's like, I mean, I don't know if I said this during the break, but it's like, you... When you start to work on something, a new, whatever it is creatively, you know, you initially are really intimidated by doing it at all. And, you know, like I was saying with music, it's like the engineering and all these technical problems in hurdles, I guess. You know, you don't have to, not everything has to be perfect. And the only way to get better is to just do something. you know, and then you can analyze the thing that you made, and you're going to know what not to do the next time.
Right.
So ultimately, yeah, it's so important to fail repeatedly or make things that don't live up to your standards so that you can, you know, reflect upon them and, you know, you can see why they matter and in terms of like the total or the timeline of your career, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but like, yeah you can, you can eventually find what their purpose was, even if it's not up to what you are then or whatever time you're analyzing them.
Right. No, absolutely. Speaking of which, and I don't know if you want me to talk about this at all, because I was just looking through your channel and I was just curious because I saw one of your playlists said Home Improvement on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I only saw the first episode of Home Improvement.
Okay.
How? I'm very fascinated because it felt like this acerbic deconstruction of what Home Improvement is, and it was absurd because it wasn't absurd. Because it wasn't zany and crazy like the original Home Improvement series was. So where did the idea came from to write that?
That word was present before, and it's going to be present again, which is pragmatic. That guy, Alex. Alex, I is one of my best friends, and I recently released a video game trailer through my channel, which that is his first video game, and he basically quit the channel with me. He ran this channel with me. It was our channel. Mm-hmm. And before it was Hot Dad. And yeah, we needed to come up with things to do. And we weren't living in like a good area to shoot anything. And we were pretty lazy. And so, yeah, we decided to do a green screen and just go back to my hometown in rural Michigan and just shoot some stupid backgrounds. Like at my family's house and some other places. And yeah, just green screen everything. And like even the green screen wasn't even high enough. Like we had to kneel. We were always kneeling. And like in the first episode, like my brother had to sit on a chair. Like he's scooting across the screen on a chair. But like, yeah, it was just like us being lazy. And we needed some way to make an interesting video.
Yeah.
And actually, I shouldn't call it interesting video. We just wanted some other variation on content. So we had already done Seinfeld. We did a stupid Seinfeld parody like in 2007 that was just completely improvised. Mm-hmm. That's like terrible. Like that's when I first started realizing like, oh, we can toy with Seinfeld and it will make people really, really mad. Because I mean, if you look at the comments on it, there are tons of like kill yourself.
Oh my God.
Hang yourself. Like,
Jesus
it was
Christ.
Obviously just as bad of a parody as possible. So something that I learned from Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which is one of my favorite shows in terms of like comedic timing and in understanding comedy, is basically it's really fun to parody things that you're at least giving the audience the idea that you don't understand them. Mm-hmm. So like I was saying, like I'm doing the summaries of these shows and I'm focusing on details that it's clear that I haven't watched more than one episode. So it's like when you get somebody and they're being really snide and they're making fun of something and snarky and it's like clear that they don't understand at all what it is.
Yeah.
And Home Improvement was never one of my favorite shows. Like I vaguely watched it at all growing up. Like Seinfeld I like. Yeah. Home Improvement I was never a real big fan of. So we just took the characters. You've only seen episode one. It was like we were inspired by like David Cronenberg and David Lynch at the time. And it takes like these really weird turns after the first episode. The first episode was just like, you know, we didn't really know what it was going to be. But we did one and I just kept writing scripts. And all of a sudden, like, it just became really, really weird. there's not like a... You know, again, it was just like a good topic, like to, it was like making fan fiction, weird fan fiction about the show. You know, it's like the characters are, they just have the same names and they have a vaguely similar living situation. And then it just has like a bunch of dark turns. I don't know. It's, I'm glad we made it. Like, that was one of the first times I realized that, like, our work had any kind of impact. Because, like, I have friends to this day that I made just because they were fans of Home Improvement. You know, like, the first interview I ever did was because of Home Improvement. Like, this, wow. This was, like, 2009 or something. Wow. A guy contacted me, and I did, like, an email interview with him. But, yeah, like, that's... I don't know what else to say about it other than that. Yeah, it's just weird and dumb, and... It was our first attempt to, like, make a series, I guess.
Yeah.
It's, like, 8 episodes, I think.
And they're, like, four minutes each, aren't they? Something like that. So I could probably finish it, like, by tonight, probably.
It's all green screened, yeah. It's pretty weird stuff.
I can't wait.
I composed some music for it, too. I mean, it was, like, that was another... There's another time that, like, I wasn't even paying attention to the fact that I was, like, scoring our videos, sort of. With GarageBand on my really old MacBook. It was like I wasn't even thinking, like, oh, maybe I could actually write songs outside of these comedy videos. But again, it's like you become more comfortable. Like, if the whole thing is just supposed to be for laughs, you feel like it's not going to be judged as harshly.
That's true.
You know, if I make a song that sounds like a regular pop radio hit and the recording quality isn't great, no radio station is going to play it. But if it's like a silly, wacky, viral video song, you know, like that could get played on the radio, even though it's lo-fi, et cetera. Like, I think that was the biggest deal for me. Like, starting the TV themes was like, I worked on that Girls Who Care record and I had this guy mixing them, and I was like, oh, I can't release anything. I don't sound good at all compared to this guy who's a professional mixer. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I started releasing comedy songs, and it's like, oh, well, you know, the audience can hear the lyrics some of the time. That matters, you know?
Yeah. I'm just thinking about the song that it's going to be playing for the ending, Big Money Salvia. Mm-hmm. The fucking chorus has been stuck in my head for, I think, since that song has been released. Like, Big Money Salvia, Salvia. I just... And it's even funnier because I showed that video to one of my friends, but she didn't know who internet comment etiquette was, so she thought, this is weird.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know his... I mean, that's obviously an inside joke with the... his whole history as a person, you know, because he was the Salvia guy. I don't know if you saw those videos.
I've never seen the original videos of him on Salvia. Is that what it is?
Do you know about them?
I've heard about them. I think he's joked about them, but I've never actually seen them.
Yeah. I mean, one of them showed up and like re-blew up on Reddit recently, but like, yeah, it was just him just showing the absurdity of anybody trying to say that, like, you know, Salvia was a really dangerous recreational drug. Like, again, I've never tried it and I don't actually have any interest in it because anybody who's ever talked about it to me has been like, I don't feel good about the fact that I did it. Like, it was like, you know, the whole world was ripped apart and I was like, you know, screaming inside my head, trying not to be sucked into an abyss. You know, like, there are all these tales, like, that's what everybody's told me, and it's like, it doesn't sound like this is going to be a really good experience. Right. But, yeah, it was just showing that, like, you know, again, like, he basically, I think it was in the state of Texas that they tried to ban it, or they were moving to ban it based on his videos of him in the car, which he gets in the car, he takes a hit of the Salvia, and he drops the keys on the floor, and he can't do anything. Like, he's just frozen. Like, there's nobody who's going to get in the car on Salvia and be like, let's go driving. Like, they're going to lose focus instantly. Just, yeah, anybody who did that would just be the worst person on earth. Like, if you were in the middle of driving and you took a hit of it, you would crash instantly. But like, most drug users aren't that irresponsible. Right. They're like, oh, I will get high at any time, any second, instantly, you know. Like that, I don't think. So he's Big Money Salvia, though. I mean, I don't think he's done Salvia since those days, though.
I don't think so, but people do on the, in the comments especially, they always bring, well, his comment, even though the whole...
Bouncing on my boy's dick, yeah.
They're like some of the most, like, I think I only saw one Filthy Frank video, but I'm kind of afraid of looking at the comments of those as well, but it's like, I don't know, in that instance, though, because the whole point of his comedy is the fact that we're making fun of the whole culture of internet comments, and that's weird, yeah, to even say that. Like, the phrase just feels weird to me, and there's somebody's going to write a book on it at some point. Maybe they already have.
Right.
But the comments on his videos are intentionally horrible, because that's the whole point.
Right.
I guess when you started getting more traffic and you started getting more views, did you notice a trend in terms of the comments? Do you even look at the comments? I know a lot of creators tend to not look at the comments.
I try to respond to a fair amount of them. I mean, I think that, what do I want to say here? I mean, I've looked into some, I don't spend a lot of time in terms of marketing anymore, but I know that it is a general good practice to interact with your audience. And so, yeah, I mean, I try to respond to comments. If something makes me laugh, I try to make sure that I, you know, tell someone, you made me laugh, thanks for this kind of thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, it can be fun. It's just got to be worked into the routine. You know, I usually spend the first portion of my day, like, responding to emails and comments, etc., which, there's always comments, but there's not, I mean, it's not like I'm getting flooded with emails every day, but yeah, there's occasionally things that I respond to, and I don't know, I just think it's a good, I think that that's important, because I don't want to, like, you know, you were saying you're so happy to have me on the show, etc., like, I don't want to be, like, out of reach. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily, that was never my goal, to just hide from everybody, because, you know, I'm putting a part of myself out there that's pretty vulnerable.
Absolutely.
And if people get that and they connect with it, then I feel like they're going to get me by default, and they're probably a pretty great person or somebody generally good that, like, and I guess I'm not saying, like, good versus evil, but, like, yeah, like somebody I'd probably like to hang out with,
right,
you know, kind of person,
right.
So I don't want that to be, I guess, more or less a missed opportunity. Like, I can't keep up with everything, but yeah, I don't know, when people are like, you know, I can't believe you noticed me, or I can't believe he responded to me, it's like, well, you know, I'm definitely checking the comments, you know.
Yeah.
I'm definitely here. Taking on a big brother form.
My
comments are nice. I will say they're usually nice. Yeah.
That's good to hear. I mean, I was worried because when you said in the Seinfeld parody that you got comments saying kill yourself, I thought that was a trend in your other videos. I'm glad to see that's not the case.
No, I mean, it depends on what the subject is, but yeah.
Oh, well, you did also release some political songs. I haven't listened to those, I'll admit, but...
That's some good stuff. I mean, I'm proud of that stuff. I mean, I also did songs about wrestlers, which...
I heard those. I love your John Cena song.
I mean,
and
those...
Sasha Banks as well.
Those, more than anything else, like, the one that I did about The Undertaker, like, there are so many comments that are like, The Undertaker would kill your whole family. I mean, they're talking about a fictional character. I mean, they're talking about somebody who's been written by writers. You know, I don't have any problem with wrestling, but it is ultimately, you know, a soap opera for men with scripted things. And these are great athletes doing great things, but to be like, oh, you should never make fun of...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not any different than making fun of a character in a movie. And I guess having somebody get really, really angry about it. But yeah, people being like, The Undertaker could kill your whole family. The Undertaker would wipe you out easily. It just kind of blows my mind. I mean, I like that I'm stirring, I'm, you know, sticking my hand in that nest, whatever stinging insect is in it, in that case. But yeah, I mean, there's something fun about that. I like being a little bit of a rabble rouser, but I'm not like... I'm not, like, trying to troll everybody all the time.
Right.
I mean, I have like half the balls necessary to fully troll.
Have you, I'm sorry, just because I know you did a song on Hillary Clinton, you did a song on Donald Trump. Did you do a song on Bernie Sanders?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I don't know. I mean, I'll check out the song, but I don't know if I'll look at the comments of that video.
Those are all positive. I mean,
oh, okay.
I didn't, I'm, again, like, I am a Bernie supporter, but I'm not like a fervent, you know, it's not like I sit around dreaming about him all day and I don't. I don't argue with anyone about it. Like if he had been the nominee, that would have been great, but I didn't necessarily expect it to happen.
Right.
And you know, I'm usually, when I write about a subject, I'm usually kind of making fun of it, or I'm kind of toying with it, or exaggerating it, or making, you know, sort of a caricature of it lyrically. And like, yeah, that song I didn't necessarily want to make, because it's like, I can't make fun of the things that he stands for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I can't make jokes about, like, you know, universal healthcare. Like, what am I going to say? Like, what a loser he wants anybody who has a health problem to be taken care of. Like, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me. You know, I feel like I'm pretty good at making fun of things, and that just also seems like... it's kind of difficult. So, I don't know. I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, like, wrote that into the song. You know, it's like, I kind of toyed with a little bit of it, but it's like, the whole bridge is, like, me expressing my honest opinion about not necessarily wanting to make the song.
Right.
But I do like Bernie Sanders. Like, none of the other ones, you know, have any moments like that. But, like, my Pokemon Go song that
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah, same thing. Like, people were telling me to do it, and again, yeah. Like, I don't necessarily have a strong opinion about it, but instead of, you know, making a post on my Facebook page and saying, I'm not going to be doing a Pokemon Go song because, I just made the song and, like, incorporated that dialogue.
Which made it even funnier, honestly.
You know, into the lyrics, which is, I think, the best way to handle it, because it's like, wait a minute, this is your opinion that you're expressing via song? Like, that's what I like. I like it when I can potentially get that response where somebody's like, why would you make a song about this?
It's like, why talk about anything if someone's just going to say, what are you talking about? Because just shut the fuck up. What do you mean? Why can't I talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, comedy music as a whole, it can go many places, and it can go a lot of places that are distasteful. You know, like, I'm not, the things that I make fun of, I don't try to be political, but I do try to be, like, fairly, like, reasonable about my opinions and what I'm doing. And it's like, I'm not going to go after any marginalized groups. I'm not going to do anything like that, because that's not who I am as a content creator, and I never wanted to do that, you know, nor are those my opinions. But it's like, yeah, like, that's what a lot of comedy people are just about, being edgier and edgier and edgier. Right. I would rather, you know, make prudish people uncomfortable, you know, people who just have these opinions that can't be moved at all. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where I have, like, songs about piss and penis tips and not having sex and having a bunch of sex and having gay sex. And, like, you know, that's it. Like, it's things that I don't think should be taboo, you know, yeah, because absolutely. They're ultimately not hurting anyone.
Absolutely.
That's what I'd like to just, you know, make it as explicit as possible. And I think that's my contribution, because it's like, the people who get the joke are instantly like, oh, this is great, and it's so funny that, you know, you're talking about this. And, like, you know, my anti-sex rap, No Sex No Laid, like, there were multiple asexual groups on Facebook that posted it, and they were saying, like, super nice things about it, like, this is me.
Yeah.
You know, like, people saying that there's never been an asexual anthem for them before. And that just, like, that, like, floored me, because I was like, this is just, I started singing this one day while I was, like, making tea or something, just this chorus. And then I wrote a song about it, you know, that was obviously just for laughs.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to, like, make fun of asexual people, but it was just supposed to be, like, this super cool badass guy who is grossed out by everything. and he's so cool, which is, you know, like, this sort of inverted rap thing, I guess. Or like, the rap tropes of, you know,
right.
About sexual escapades and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was, I guess, like, that's my perspective, is do things like that. Songs that nobody else would write, and it was just supposed to be stupid, and then people are like, nobody has ever really written an anthem about asexuality. And a lot of them were saying, like, I know this is a joke, but, you know, it's cool that you made this. And,
oh.
Yeah, I'm just like, all of a sudden I released this dumb song that I've had repeating in my head forever. And people are saying, like, it means something to them. And I don't know what to say about that as a content creator. Like, that feels incredible.
Wow.
You obviously don't know when that's coming, I guess. Like, when you're doing the kind of material I am.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm really flattered by it.
I'm speechless. I'm literally speechless right now. I actually don't know what to say. Better yet, though, because we are
the best of us.
Because we are actually at the end of the program. So yeah, Jesus, what? Where am I? I don't know.
Looking
where
at
I am.
A timeline. Looking at a file.
I am looking at my phone.
You're in Cleveland, right?
I am in Cleveland. Yes.
I can help.
I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. It's like I blanked out for a second. Just that story was just so amazing. Right. Eric, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I mean, I'm always honored that anybody would want to talk to me about anything, you know.
I thought the exact same thing. I think when I got your email on Monday, because I wasn't even expecting it. I wasn't expecting anything. I woke up my roommate screaming like a banshee. Just like, ah!
Wow. I mean, I'm glad that I could make your dreams come true.
I don't know if I'll even be able to sleep tonight. I'll feel probably just like, this happened. This is amazing, and I couldn't be happier.
You got albums to listen to. You got stuff you got to hear now.
I do. I absolutely do. I'm definitely going to check out your full album. Hold on. I have the page out. Woman Titles.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check that out. I will watch the rest of Home Improvement season one. And I guess I should listen to the whole TV album since I haven't actually heard it. I've only heard parts of it.
Yeah, I mean it's on Spotify also. I don't know what, you know, streaming services people use. I mean, I have a lot of stuff. All my stuff is pay what you want on Bandcamp. I think a few things are on there that are not zero possible, but yeah, everything's on, most things are on Spotify now. I've started to get more serious about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Distribution.
Where else can people find you, Eric?
I mean, my YouTube channel is definitely the center for things, which is probably easier linked. I mean, if you search for Hot Dad on YouTube, you'll find me, but like the channel is .flist, .flist, which is when I was talking about Alex before, that was our channel name that we had, mm-hmm. which I can't change it to what I want right now. I have to do Hot Dad with another character after it, and I haven't decided what that character will be. So currently it's that. But yeah, if you search for Hot Dad, that's the best place, I think. I mean, my Bandcamp page, I have a Patreon that, like, I'm not going to say it's full of great rewards because, like I said, like, most of my music is given away for free. But, like, yeah, I mean, the people who pledge, I mean, I think are incredible people. And I try to interact with them there in a way that's different than just the standard person. I mean, I try to give them a little more input in terms of what I'm doing and working on, or allow them input. But yeah, I mean, I'm on most streaming services. I'm on Bandcamp. I've got a SoundCloud. Got a Facebook page. Got a Twitter. I've got all the accounts.
I will be sure to put links of all those things in the description of this episode once it's up.
Excellent.
All right. So taking this out today is because I cannot resist. Big Money Salvia by Eric. As always, you can find our podcast at randomchatterings.weebly.com. You can find us on Twitter at our Twitter handle at RandChatPodcast. You can email us at randchatpodcast@gmail.com. And you can find us on iTunes or on Stitcher by searching Random Chatterings, a silly podcast from silly people. I don't have a question of the week. Fuck. I thought I had a question of the week. Shit. Eric, do you have a question of the week?
Do I have one?
Yeah, do you have one?
Can I come up with one?
You can come up with one if you want to.
How fast do I have to come up with it?
Not fast. We could take as much time as we need to. I'm sorry. I had a question and I completely forgot about it. I'm very professional at what I do.
You forgot the question or you forgot about the question?
I forgot the question.
So you didn't. You did remember about the question.
I mean, this always happens.
What's an example of another question?
I might actually have a question.
Okay.
You don't have to answer. This is a question for the audience.
Okay.
And our question of the week is, what is your favorite comedy music group? So, yep.
It's a good question.
I mean, do you have an answer to that? Or,
if I had to pick one, I would say in terms of my life and my impact would be Weird Al.
Weird Al Yankovic, he's one of the greats.
When I say my impact, that was not the way to say it, but impact on me.
I didn't even catch.
I don't have any impact on Weird Al. I don't think.
I didn't even catch that. Yeah, Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm glad. well, I mean, parts of this part were pretty awkward, but I mean, we're pretty awkward people, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for this. It's been nice talking to you.
Yeah.
I wish you the best.
Thank you. All right. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Montel Shkreli. Montel Shkreli. Tick, tick, tock. It's Elvia O'Clock. Slapping around Shkreli with my digital cock. 9/11 inside job. Click, click. Spent 3 fucking hours bouncing on my boy's dick. Big Money Elvia, king of the night. With an iron fist, bouncing on his boy's dick, don't forget, don't forget, telling us the truth about the Montels. Big money, Salvia. 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 Big money, Salvia.